now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lanes. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Episode 100, we are here, we are now, it is live, 100 episodes, we made it, Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I'm so thankful, so grateful for everyone who continues to listen, continues to support through Bleacher Report, through Wrestling Inc., through WeAreWrestling.net. Wherever you're listening to it, iTunes, wherever you subscribe it from, thank you so much for listening to Pancakes and Power Slam. Since April of 2012, we are here at episode 100, and I am so thankful and grateful. Before we have our amazing featured guest in today, it would be ridiculous of me not to acknowledge the passing of Nelson Frazier, also known as Big Daddy V, Viscera, Big Vis, and Mabel, King Mabel. I got the information after the show last week, and so I'm just so sad and so sorry for the untimely passing, in a natural eye at least. He was 43 years old, and our thoughts and prayers go with him. So deservedly, he's going to have a moment of silence right now. Rest in peace, Nelson Frazier. All right, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I am pleased to introduce to you former WWE superstar Gabe Tuff, formerly known as Tyler Rex. Good evening, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm good, I'm good. Hey, let me ask you, I've got this new headset on. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, absolutely. We hear you great.
Perfect. Good. I want this 100th episode to come out great for you. So, hey, congratulations on that, by the way.
Thanks a lot, man. I really, really appreciate it. And just all the support throughout the almost 2 years of the show and 100 episodes. And just very, very glad to have you here tonight to launch 100 more.
Thanks, man. It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. So without further ado, let's get into knowing more about Gabe Tuff, a.k.a. Tyler Rex. So how did you get your break into wrestling?
Well, it's no secret that Rick Bassman, who was the owner of Ultimate Pro Wrestling, was a good friend of mine, and still is. He owned a gym that was literally a 30-second drive from my condo in San Clemente, California. And we got to be friends because my wife had a personal training center that was a few blocks away, and he didn't do personal training at the gym, so we were trading clients back and forth, referring clients. So we got to be really good buddies. So, I got to preface this by saying I'd kind of shunned wrestling since I was like 12 years old. I just got out of it and just never followed it. So now I'm 27 when I'm friends with Rick Bassman, and I've been hanging out with him and guys like Tom Howard, Bear, who is Sylvester Turkey. sometimes known as Predator, and I'm getting kind of re-immersed into this world of pro wrestling. So Rick calls me one night. It's like, I think, 6 at night. I just finished surfing. I'm still dripping wet from the ocean. And he goes, "Hey, Gabe, what are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm just kind of hanging out watching TV. What's up, man?" And he goes, "Look, I know you don't know much about wrestling, and I know you're not really into it right now in your life." He goes, "But I got some scouts here. Do you want to just pop in and see, have them take a look at you, see if there's anything there?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, man." He goes, "There's nothing to lose. Just walk on up." So I threw on some jeans and a T-shirt and strolled up to the, well, it was called OC Dojo at the time, strolled up to the dojo. And when I walked in the door, I just about peed myself. There were like 40 dudes there in like full gear in their trunks and their boots and like all gimmicked, and like it was just crazy. They're bumping around in the ring, and I didn't realize it was this huge tryout. And Bucci was there, and Lauren Idis was there, and I mean, I was clueless as to what I walked into. But Bucci found me, and he pulled me and a couple other dudes back into the back office and said, "Look, guys, I know you don't know what's going on. Just watch, and we'll have you come back tomorrow. We like you guys' looks." So we observed, got a chance to kind of see what it was all about. And then the next day, they tossed us in the ring, showed us how to bump, and just kind of tried to see if we were athletic. And it basically led to a tryout in Deep South, which eventually led to a contract with Florida Championship Wrestling, in Florida Championship Wrestling.
Nice.
Yeah, just right place, right time.
Yeah, you saw some success in FCW as well. You won the tag team championship and also the Florida heavyweight championship, correct?
Yeah, I did. It was fun. I won the tag champs with Johnny Curtis, who is now Fandango.
Fandango. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Best gimmick ever. What's funny about that is that is. Yeah. Kurt is a funny guy. He is he can be a little off sometimes, and we call him Creepy Curtis just because he gets that kind of creepy look on his face.
Yeah.
But that character is just like, it's totally him with the volume turned up. And you know, Hunter always said that's the best gimmick, when it's you and you just crank that volume up. So hats off to Fandango, man. He's love that guy.
Yeah. My co-host Derek, he has some type of odd affinity for Fandango, and he, every week he says something about him. I liken him to a combination of Disco Inferno and Val Venus, just wrapped
up in one. That's a good analogy. It's embarrassing there.
Yeah. I mean, if. And hey, he's doing what he needs to do to see some type of success in the WWE. And I've said in many shows before, you know, we can, us as journalists and us as critics, we can do whatever we want to say something, this person isn't as good or losing. But hey, when you have that moment to come into the WWE and fulfill your dream, you can lose every night and still live a dream, so to speak. So
I'm living proof of that.
Yeah, totally, absolutely, man. So you said that you were into wrestling until right before your preteens.
Yeah, it was. Let's see, I think I was like 12 or 13. Well, what happened is my parents pulled the plug on cable. There was this big movement going around, and they just jumped in. We had moved to a different city, and when we moved, they just said, "You know what? We're not gonna turn on cable, and we're gonna deal with it." And so, you know, it wasn't by choice, but just not having cable around, that was it. I was done. So it was no more wrestling for me. And then I just never got back into it.
So when you were watching wrestling as a kid, who were some wrestlers that were your favorites?
Oh man, remember I was little. Guys like Big Boss Man. He gave me nightmares, man. I was I remember being a kid and like watching it with my dad and seeing the Boss Man come on, and I would like cuddle up with my dad like y'all scared because the guy was cutting this really mean promo. Beefcake was another guy I loved. You know, I just, as a kid, these guys back in the 80s, they were just larger than life, you know, and in a different way than they are now. I mean, now it's, you know, it's more real. Vince was adamantly against gimmicks when we were there. No gimmicks was the rule. And I can understand where that went. But, you know, as a kid, I will just never forget the crazy gimmicks. Of course, I loved Ultimate Warrior. I don't think any kid did love him. As terrible as he is in the ring, I didn't know that. You know, I just thought this freak with war paint and, you know, bright colors and strings strapped around his arms, running down, beating everybody up and then running out. I thought it was probably the coolest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, I'm totally on you with the Ultimate Warrior thing. Just you and I aren't too far apart in age, and I grew up watching wrestling in the 80s as well, and just the Ultimate Warrior was just, you know, larger than life. You're absolutely right. And as far as Beefcake is concerned, I remember having some clippers, some tree clippers. And I would do the Beefcake thing and with the tree cutters and it was absolutely hilarious. So I'm totally on board with that as well as being a Beefcake fan. So as far as the WWE is concerned, you got your break in FCW, and then you transition over to ECW as more of a surfer gimmick, which you're a big surfer, if I'm not mistaken, that you like to do. Yeah, and so how did that come about? Was it more of a, hey, this is what I do, and Vince or Laurinaitis or whoever was like, okay, let's just roll with that, or how did that come about as far as your ECW gimmick is concerned?
I had really been fighting to understand the idea of a character when FCW was still running bar shows and armories. And, I mean, every Tuesday night, the FCW crew would pack up a ring. We'd drive to, where was it? It was like a 40-minute drive. I can't remember the name of it for me. It was Bourbon Street near Tampa is the name of the bar. And it was this dive bar. So we were working in little places like that, and I was struggling to understand characters, and I'd gone through a couple, and I was trying to find myself. And one night, I've been wearing these biker shorts, these real generic biker sports shorts. I think I bought them on High Spots with like a pre-made like spider on them or something. It was so bad. But we had this idea to paint up a pair of board shorts. My wife is really creative and really crafty. And she just, like, put a bunch of, like, bling on them and did a bunch of, like, fabric paint. And they turned out to be pretty cool. And I wore them one night just experimenting, because that's what we were told to do, just experiment. And Dr. Tom, who I love to death, great guy, he goes, hey, I like that. The crowd liked that. Why don't you roll with that? And I said, okay, that's kind of who I am. So it became this iteration of buying board shorts at, like, a surf shop and then dolling them up, for lack of a better term. And I even, it's crazy, man, for a while I went barefoot. When you guys, you remember Offa, right? It was Manu.
Oh,
yeah. So, Offa kind of showed me the ropes about going barefoot, and, you know, a lot of those Samoan guys just do that. And I swear, man, it is so painful. I broke, like, two toes in the process. The tops of my feet were always broken. One of my moves was this terrible-looking moonsault that I used to do, but I would always just land on the top of my feet. And, you know, after a while, it wasn't working. So the gimmick was progressing, and basically my wife started taking up sewing again, and she was working for a fashion designer and started asking this designer for all these tips. And before we know it, we had these really cool board shorts with all these cool designs. I had that hang loose symbol on my board shorts. And then when that character, I guess, became, gosh, what's the word for it? I just developed fully. They said, okay, we're going to give you the strap. Let's see what you can do as champ. And then they called me up with that gimmick. But here's the thing. I don't even know if I told anybody this on any other podcast ever. The week we were supposed to debut on TV, Johnny Laurinaitis comes to me and he goes, hey, two things. You can't wear the shorts.
Nice.
That tells me no shorts. You got to wear trunks. And then two, I can't do my hang loose symbol, which is like what I did. It was, you know, it's a surfer thing. It was Casino does it. And so there was like two huge wrenches in my gimmick. I'm like, okay, wait, you want me to be a surfer, but you want me to wear trunks and you don't want me to throw the hang loose symbol. I'm like, okay. So I strapped on a pair of trunks and felt like an idiot because I'd never worn them before. And that the first time I wore trunks in a match was when I debuted on ECW. And it was, wow. It was the weirdest feeling. There was like this big breeze that kept blowing through my inner thighs. it just threw me for this huge loop, man. But yeah, that's how the gimmick came around.
That's awesome. I was saying nice to your Laurinaitis impression. I wanted to hear more because I've done Laurinaitis on the show before impressions, and I've got pretty funny replies towards my Laurinaitis impression. So
he's the easiest one to do too. He's got to be really
he any Laurinaitis moments that you can remember offhand?
Where do you want me to start? do you want the good ones, the bad ones? Like I got a quad.
A good one and a bad one.
A good one. Okay, a good one. We're still in SCW before the arena mm-hmm. was finished, and so we've just got. What it was three rings in this warehouse in the back, no air conditioning, and they were building out the arena where FCW TV used to be filmed. It was adjacent to it. So we're doing the show at Bourbon Street, and Laurinaitis and Ty Bailey show up. We get the Iggy that they're coming, and so everybody's freaking out. And so we do our matches, and he's just scoping it. And, you know, we're so nervous because they teach us to be nervous. They taught us to just be shaky and nervous, and in reality Johnny's just like, okay, let's see what this kid could do and if there's any potential. But he stuck around afterwards, and we're all like, okay, who's gonna drink with Johnny? And stinking Heath Miller, aka Heath Slater, just mm-hmm. walks up to the bar with a bunch of us and looks at Johnny and goes, hey Johnny, man. And Johnny goes, what's up, kid? Miller goes, I bet I can drink more than you. Laurinaitis looks at me and he goes, did he just say what I think he said? And I looked at him like, yeah, man, he did. He goes, all right, let's go. And Miller and Laurinaitis drank and drank till he could not stand up. And he's spilling his alcohol and he's just, game, don't, you got to hold me up. I can't not drink because they don't think I'm weak. So, wow. You know, Heath is just smashed, and all of a sudden Johnny looks at us, and he looks at his phone, and this is what I've come to understand about Johnny. There's nothing going on his phone. It's his excuse. He looks at it and goes, oh, hey, I got this call. I got to take this. Hang on. He walks outside, and he just powders. We didn't even know it. He just hopped in his car and left, and he just left us all there waiting for him. We sat around for an hour waiting for him to come back. He never came back. We ended up carrying poor Heath home. So, but, yeah, that was a good Johnny moment. Yeah, a bad Johnny moment. I have so many. There's so many. I think it's just I'm always upset with Johnny because he was he created this disillusion that, you know, by coming to the WWE, I had all this potential. And this was a story he told a lot of guys that weren't in wrestling. Like, we're going to make a lot of money. We're going to make him a lot of money. We're going to be stars. And so we realized it doesn't happen. And, man, when Hawkins and I were tag teaming, there was this one point where I was hurting for money. You know, bills are expensive. They don't pay us a whole lot if you're not a top card guy. And I think there's this disillusion that the guys get paid a ton of money, and we don't. If you're one of the top, you know, six, seven guys, you're Cena, you're an Orton, you're a Jericho, yep, you're making money. But the rest of us, dude, we pay for everything except flights. We pay for rental cars, we pay for food on the road, we pay for hotels, we pay for all our gear, our boots, our knee pads, anything that we want to use to better ourselves, anything that we do to promote, it's on us. So it hurts. And I go to Johnny one time, And I go, hey, Johnny, man, I really got to talk to you. And I finally caught him. He's like, well, catch me here, catch me there. And I finally caught him. It was at a show. I think it was at Raw or SmackDown. I'm like, hey, man, I am really hurting for money right now. I'm like, my wife's pregnant. We're about to have a kid. I've got hospital bills piling up. I'm like, is there any way I can get a small bump in my pay? And he looks at me, and he just bursts into laughter. He's just, what? And I look at him, like, I'm serious. He goes, kid, you got to get on TV before you can get a bump. And he walks away. And I'm just like, I'm 34 years old at that time. I go, who treats another man that way? I'm like, Johnny, you do the booking. You do the booking, man, as he walks away. And I've got nothing else to say. He just, that's how he was. It was like, if you're not on the radar, he doesn't care about you. And unfortunately, it was like that with a lot of people. I got belittled by him quite a bit on many occasions. And other days, like when I was doing that heel gimmick, when I came back as T-Rex and I defeated Caval, that was Vince. Vince is like, one day in a production meeting, he goes, hey, what's up with Tyler Rex? Just randomly. And the writers, apparently, this is what I heard from Kidman, the writers just like drop jawed, were like, I don't know. What, because he debuts tonight. So he sent him off writing something, and then suddenly I debut, I defeat Caval, I go to the bragging rights, and next thing I know, I'm Johnny's best friend. And then when all that ended, Johnny wouldn't even give me the time of day. So I'm like, oh, dude, you are not a nice person. I don't want to, that's about all I can say. It's just, he's all strictly business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was actually going, I was thinking about that heel kind of resurrection, so to speak, because the ECW gimmick kind of came and gone a little bit, and then out of nowhere, and then you had the burning hammer, right? When you were a heel,
yeah.
You had that as a finisher. Your idea, or someone else's?
So this is how it came about. When this character was being developed, I needed a new finisher. And I needed something really cool and really powerful. And I was in FCW practicing this gimmick, practicing some stuff. And I look at Trent. You guys remember Trent Beretta, right? Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Kid.
Question mark.
Full of tricks. Yeah, question mark. Where's Trent, man? Shout out to Trent. Trent, I love you, bro. He goes, out of nowhere, he's like, well, let's just use the burning hammer. And I look at him like, dude, I can't. It's too dangerous. He's like, no, wait, we can figure it out. And so he kind of showed me how to put him in it, and we called Kidman over, and we go, Kidman, how do we do this safely? And Kidman goes, oh, instead of dropping him on his head, just have him land on his stomach and sit out with it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he did it like four or five times. It looked great. I tried it on some bigger guys. It looked great. And they're like, that's it. Use it. And when I re-debuted, they want to know what my finisher was. And Arn and Fit, who were like, they were Arn and Fit. I can't say enough good stuff about those guys. They just took me under their wing and really helped me out a lot. And they go one day, they go, okay, kid, what's your finisher? And I told them, I'm like, well, what is it? I haven't seen that. How is it safe? And I had been using it with Goldust, with Dustin. And he had taken it once or twice for me. And he goes, I'll take it for you, bro. And Arn looks at him. He's like, what? What are you talking about? And he goes, just let me do this for this kid. And for no reason, Goldie's just helping me out, right? And I showed Arn and Fit in the ring in front of everybody, and they're like, how'd it feel, Dustin? He's like, didn't hurt at all. It was easy. I'm like, okay. Did you want a big guy? I said, yeah. They're like, all right, that's your finisher. So they told me, green lighted it, said use it. And that was the okay for it. It was great, man. I loved it. It was really fun. It was a good power move, and it was just, it looked devastating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely looked devastating. And as far as the gimmick, did they have anything long-term for it? Because when you came back, I mean, it was pretty rugged, and it had so much promise to it. And, when you went on the Bragging Rights team, and if I remember correctly, you eliminated Santino, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and And so basically it just seems like there was so much promise in that heel gimmick. Were they actually in talks of a push for you, or was it just kind of like a trial and error type thing?
Well, I think the original idea, with Vince going, hey, Rex debuts tonight, put him in bragging rights, hypothetically you want to think, yeah, they had a push in mind. But the problem was that Hunter hadn't stepped in yet to be head of creative, or what did they call that division? It was like talent development. There was no talent development division. There was nobody coming in and saying, hey, why don't you try this? Why don't you try that? I like this gimmick. Here's what we're going to do. I have this great idea for you, or let's do this. It was just, what you got, kid? And that was it. It was like there was nobody holding your hand and going, okay, try this tonight, try that tonight. Have you thought about this promo? It was all on me, and I'm waiting for them to say, okay, take the mic and do something. And the opportunity never came. I think what they thought was that the writers would help out, and they didn't, and they ended up just not knowing who that dark T-Rex character was, and they just didn't know what to do with it, so it fell off the radar. And that's when I got that's when I hooked up with Hawkins and decided to just say screw it, I don't care anymore, we're gonna try stuff. We're at the bottom of the barrel, and honestly it was the best thing that could have happened to me, because even though I didn't really resurface much after that, I got to the point where wrestling was fun. I love being in the ring for a lot of guys, it's not fun. It's nerve-wracking. It's pushing and pulling. We got a lot of green guys in that ring. Even still, I was playing catch-up to the next. I haven't watched in a while. And just watching what goes on, the guys are still green that are up there. They don't have years of experience. And neither did I. I didn't have anybody like Edge or Christian. Well, I did have Edge and Christian. I had Christian in a bunch of matches. And Chavo, MVP, those guys, just when you have matches against vets, it changes your perspective and it changes the way you work. And without that consistently, without working with top guys, you never will progress. And so that's just what happened with that T-Rex character.
Yeah. So how did you get plugged with Curt Hawkins? How did that come about, and were there any plans with that, or just was it just kind of just plug you somewhere and see how it goes?
No, that was Hawkins and me. When Lance Archer got released, Hawkins was looking for something, and I was looking for something, and I don't remember exactly how it went, but there was a dark match available, and Hawkins goes, hey, why don't you and I just tag up tonight and see if we can get this dark match? Because they want a tag match. I said, yeah, man, let's do it. And I don't even remember who it was against, but we clicked. Like, from the second we got out there, we clicked. And Hawkins is a vet in my book. No questions asked. I mean, he's been in this business for as long as anyone has. He knows what he's doing. His psychology in the ring is awesome, and he flows. He may not be the most noticeable guy for whatever reason, but he's just so underrated. I learned a ton, and we clicked, and we just said, you know what? We are going to be a team. I don't care what anybody says, we're going to be a team. And if there was a dark match available and they booked me, I'd go to Michael Hayes, like, hey, it's Freebird, come here, man. Can we get this, switch? Can me and Hawkins do a match that way everybody gets to work? We politic it a little bit. And like, hey, we got guys sitting on the bench. Let's do a tag match. It's really fun. The crowd gets into it. And they eventually said, yeah. And we got another dark match and another dark match and another one and another one. And before you knew it, we were on Superstars against, Kofi and Bourne and Kofi and Truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it just – and the other thing, too, is like when we were tagging, they didn't want tag teams to have matching gear. That was their big thing. No matching gear. And one day, I just looked at Hawkins. I'm like, dude, screw this, man. We need matching gear. And he agreed completely. Or maybe he told me. I don't know. Whatever it was, we decided that we would have matching gear. And we just said, screw it. If they don't like it, that's too bad. And we went out there and looked like a team and acted like a team. And suddenly, the tag team division starts becoming revived, which was just awesome because they saw a need for it.
Nice. So somehow you two got paired up to feud with Ryback. How did that come about, and what was your feelings on that?
Yeah, I love Reeves, great guy, and we just kind of looked at it like, you know what, we're still paying our dues, apparently, and it's not our time right now, and I'm cool with that. And the way Hawkins and I viewed that was they picked us because they knew that we would make Ryback look good. They knew that we wouldn't screw it up. They were investing a lot of time and money in him. They were giving him this big push. And they go, okay, what guys, who's next? You know, who can he have a solid match against? And Arn comes to us and goes, look, guys, you each are going to have individual matches with Ryback. And the idea is that he's going to take out Hawkins, but Hawkins is going to get a couple of hits on him. Then Rex, when you go in there and you have your singles match, you'll be the first guy to ever take him down. He's like, right now you're the only guy that's not in a storyline that can do this. He's like, you're still going to, you know, he's still going to go over, and it's going to be a short match, but you're going to get to take him down and get a couple of hits on him. So they had this in mind. It was kind of a test, and Arn said, if it works out, there may be something for you in a pay-per-view. So let's see where this goes. And I think what happened is that Arn and Fit just pushed to make it happen. And basically it was an opportunity to go out there at a pay-per-view, help make a brand new superstar, put him on the, you know, the top ranks, and at the same time get us noticed by Vince and Hunter and say, dude, these guys did a great job, which is exactly what happened. Because right after that match, we went back through Gorilla, chatted about it, and then we saw Hunter, and we went up and like, hey, Hunter, what, you know, was the match okay? Was that what you wanted? You know, he goes, yeah, man, yeah, that was exactly what we wanted. He goes, hey, come here. And he puts his arm around us. He goes, I got an idea for you guys. And that's where he spit the stripper gimmick to us. And that's how that all spawned. So we got noticed, and that's what it was all about.
Nice. So shortly after that, you decided to call it quits and pursue other endeavors. You were involved and heavily involved in fitness and marketing before wrestling, correct? And you kind of decided to go full-fledged into that, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, I didn't. I wasn't into marketing before, other than marketing my own companies that I had owned. So I wasn't a marketing expert. I was always a closet internet geek, though. And, excuse me, my brother-in-law had come to me about a year before, and he said, hey, man, I know you don't want to wrestle forever. I know it's a limited sport for everybody. He goes, why don't you and I start something? And he has had and still has a very successful digital marketing business that focuses on auto dealerships, and he's been doing this stuff since, like, 2000. And he goes, let's get you dialed in when you're not on the road. We'll go hunt down a couple clients. We'll get your feet wet. And when you and I can go start something and just branch out and do other things aside from auto dealerships. So, yeah, man, that's cool. So while I was on the road, I'd bring my laptop and I'd get Wi-Fi on the plane and I'd start making contacts and start bringing in a couple clients. And before you knew it, I had a bed and breakfast in Calistoga, which is like the heart of Napa Valley, a health club, which is now two health clubs that's still in my portfolio. And I started to see, okay, there's good money here. We're doing good work. I know what I'm doing. I understand this business. And so that was kind of my fallback security blanket, knowing that I'd get 90 days. When we cut ties with WWE, they pay you for 90 days. That's in your contract. So I knew I had 3 months to get a business up and running and paying my bills, which I did.
Wow. So what made you decide to leave the WWE?
I don't think it's any big secret to most of the wrestling world, but my daughter was 8 months old, and she was starting to notice that I was leaving. And I was noticing that I was missing out on her life. And I know a lot of people go, oh, she's 8 months old. I mean, what could you really miss? She eats, she poops, she sleeps. That's it, right? And there's so much more. Like, infants change every day. Their face changes. Their reactions change. And I was missing out. And I realized that I just couldn't do both. And a lot of guys choose to stay on the road, and I have no hard feelings for them. I think that's great. But for me personally, man, I wanted to be in my daughter's life. I wanted to be a dad. and I can't do that, or I couldn't do it if I was gone 5 days a week. It just, there would be no way. You know what happens to daughters without dads? They do not grow up good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's total respect on my end for that, for sure.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you, man.
As a wrestling fan and a father, the fatherhood is much more important than any wrestling ring or dollar amount could ever compare. So I totally respect you for that. So
thanks. It's true. Nothing can compare to that.
Oh no! My boy is almost a year and a half. So,
you're right there.
I do. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He is the greatest thing that ever happened in my life, and just his smile alone is worth.
It's worth it.
Priceless.
Yep.
priceless. All right, so a quick. Yeah, man, it's amazing. A quick name association, just five names before we close, and then you have a big announcement that I'm excited about. Triple H, just a really brief opinion on these names, and we'll do it like that.
Okay, Triple H, nice guy. I got no issues with him. He was actually very cool to me. I think he's got everything dialed in for that company, and he's taken it in the right direction. He's definitely into helping his talent. He sees the need to develop the talent, develop their gimmicks, so that they can have a continually successful company.
Nice. Sheamus.
Sheamus was nice in the beginning, and then I realized he steps on heads and suddenly isn't your friend anymore. He acts like your friend, but he's not. He only does what's good for Sheamus. Sorry, dude. It's just the truth.
John Cena.
He's a workhorse. Let me preface this by, Cena is a workhorse. He does incredible things for the company. And in the ring, he busts his butt. Outside the ring, I can't stand the guy. He's not a nice guy. He is to some people, but to me, he was never a nice guy. He holds talent down. He steals ideas. And he's just generally a prick, for lack of a better term. Sorry, I know I'm going to get a bunch of slack for this, but, that's just my experience with him.
Yeah. The Undertaker.
Awesome. He's every bit as awesome backstage as he is in the ring. You have to earn his respect to get 2 seconds of his time. And once you have his time, if he likes you, he will help you. And he helped me, and he's a great guy. I can't say enough good things about him.
Awesome. And then lastly, Vince McMahon.
Oh, Vince. I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with Vince. It was always, hey, sir, how are you? Great to see you. And he'd nod. I'm like, you even know my name. But, that's it. I can't give you anything on him because I don't know him except for yes, sir, no, sir. Good talking to you. See you later. That's it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, without further ado, what do you have for us, sir?
All right. So I know a lot of people know. I put out there on Twitter a couple days ago about this new website, bodyspartan.com, and I didn't say anything about it. I just said, here's a new website. And so the question is, what is it? I've been teasing it. I'm telling you guys that there are other superstars involved. Yes. Body Spartan is a launching platform for the fitness book that I just finished writing. The book is a motivational fitness book. It has a lifestyle diet. It has a 12-week shredding diet and nutrition plan in it, and it has a 12-week workout program that I put together using all my coveted secrets, so to speak. I had so many people on Twitter and fans and guys on the roster like Rex, how do you stay in such good shape? Well, what is your secret? And I would, I'd tell the guys as they'd ask. One day I just go, let's just put this in a book and make it available for everyone. Let's see if we can help some people change their lives. Change your physique, change your life. That's the tagline. And so that is the launching platform for the book. But the bigger picture is that I have collaborated with five other people to draft articles on a weekly basis and be partners with me in this endeavor. And basically our goal is to put out educated, good fitness content on a weekly basis. So I got five guys, including myself, make six, that are going to be writing two articles a week, one workout, one maybe a general blog or motivational fitness, maybe something on supplements. And they're going to be spitting them out on a weekly basis, and it's going to be free for everybody to go and see. And it's the first time that international superstars have put the pen to the paper, so to speak, and said, hey, this is what we do. I mean, there's bodybuilding.com, there's muscle and fitness, yep. But, you know, there's something to be said about guys that bust their butt on a weekly basis that are on the road, that are on TV, and that are icons in everybody's home. And now the question is, who are these other superstars? You guys ready?
Yes,
drum roll,
sir.
Please. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, just kidding. Okay, so first we got Big Zeke from Raw. So he's we all know he's a massive monster of a man. He's got these 24-inch arms and the traps that just won't quit. Guy's a pinnacle example of a big guy. So he's on board. We've got Gemma Palmer, who was Inferno from the UK Gladiator show. I got JTG on board. I got Brian Cage, who is a bodybuilder. He was also in FCW with me. He never made it to TV, but he still wrestles on the indies. He is a personal trainer, and the guy is in phenomenal shape. I can only aspire to be in as good a shape as he is. And then the last piece of the puzzle is we need somebody with some real sports knowledge, sports nutrition knowledge. My wife, Priscilla Tuft, former WNFL professional fitness competitor, professional fitness model, and licensed sports nutritionist. So the six of us have put our heads together. We'll be spitting out content. We'll also be selling nutrition plans. There's this incredible company that we teamed up with that my wife and I used to use when we owned our personal training center, and we'll be selling these custom nutrition plans. And basically, for a fee, you will take it takes about 9 minutes online. You fill out an assessment, you know, body weight, your height. If you want to take body measurements, that'll help too. But it spits out this awesome nutrition and exercise plan for you. It makes a menu for every day of the week. It gives you a printable shopping menu. It gives you a customized workout plan. And then every 2 weeks, you take your measurements all over again, and it recreates that program so that you can meet your goal. It's amazing software. There's nothing else like that on the planet. I mean, this stuff is incredible, and people get results. So that's what we're doing. I love to just tell people that there is an opportunity right now for early bird signups. If you go to bodyspartan.com, sign up for the email, or put your email in the sign-up box down there. We're going to be offering package deals. They're going to be limited time, and you can only get them if you sign up early. You're going to get the book, the nutrition plan, at a huge discount, and there will probably be discounts on the book as well and other things. So now is the chance. When the site launches, those deals go away. So get over to bodyspartan.com and sign up, guys.
Wow, that is amazing, amazing news. I've been in personal training since 2005, and last year I had two surgeries, and now I'm all cleared up to go back and work out hard again. So
awesome.
I'm usually in the gym 5 to 6 days a week to get the little surgery weight that I gained off, but I can definitely utilize that myself, even being a personal
awesome,
trainer
man.
For 10 years. Yeah, so... Yeah,
good to know. I'll send you a copy for fun, so you can get it before anybody else.
Yes, absolutely. That is exciting. So it has been
cool.
Such a pleasure. This is a fantastic way to start off episode 100. I couldn't have chose anyone better. This was a fantastic interview. I thank you so much for your genuineness and just your fun and your excitement just as a person. And I can tell one thing that I can tell is that you love your wife and you love your kid, and those are the two biggest things in the world. So.
I do. Definitely.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Well, you enjoy bodyspartan.com. That is where everyone who's listened to this show, which is many, many people, you need to go there. BodySpartan.com is the place to be, and it'll change your life. So thank you so
Absolutely.
Much again, Gabe, and you enjoy, man. Thank you so much again.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Fantastic, fantastic interview from Gabe Tuft, a.k.a. Tyler Rex. Wonderful. I love how he was all the way real about the names. That earned so much respect for him. Just discussing with him the show and his excitement for it earned very much respect too. And even before the interview, it really seemed like he was a very level-headed guy, which you don't have many of those people in the wrestling world. Again, as he explained through a couple of names that I threw out. So major kudos to Gabe Tuft, formerly known as Tyler Rex, and that was a fantastic way to start the show. All right, episode 100 kicks on with part two. We have the roundtable discussion, and without further ado, I'd like to introduce the roundtable. First, we have our co-host, Derek. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. Great job. Interview, awesome. Wow. This is episode 100. I'm so happy to be a part of this. I will never forget this night. This is Pancakes and Power Slams, the best in wrestling as far as commentary goes. Chris Featherstone, awesome, awesome job. I'm so excited. We're going into part two. Stay tuned. This is it. This is the place to be. Tyler Rex, awesome, awesome, awesome. Very, very genuine. You're right. He's very genuine. He seems so down to earth, happy, likes to have fun. I mean, you can just sit down and talk to him about anything. It's very, I'm flattered to have him on this show. I am so flattered. Absolutely wonderful.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Thank you so much. All right. And then we have from the Bleacher Report, featured columnist, Galino Romano. How are you today, sir? All the way from Quebec City, Quebec. And he is not the Mountie.
Yeah, that's right.
But he will enforce the law.
Well, we'll have to make do with all the snow we have up here. Very cold.
Wow. Wow. That's that's Canada for you, huh? No. But,
tell me about it. One more month.
Yeah.
One more month of this, and then we're off to the nice springtime and summer, you know, SummerSlam, WrestleMania, all the good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Well,
it's
thanks
great
for
to
having
have
me.
You.
This is, first-time experience for me to be on an actual radio talk show about pro wrestling, and it's on the Internet, so mm-hmm. hopefully I'll know what I'm talking about here. Not embarrass me myself too much.
Yeah, well, when it comes to wrestling, I don't think there's much of any embarrassment. Just straight shooting.
I'll
and,
embarrass you maybe when I answer all the
all
right trivia questions.
And without further ado, it has been nearly a year and a half, but we have here on Pancakes and Power Slams, we have the return of Ryan Fuqua. He is here and he is live.
Hey, what's going on?
I think someone's computer is on.
Network for a few.
I think someone's computer may be on or something like that. Maybe I need to turn that down, turn the volume down so we can get that straightened out so we can get all cleared up here. I don't know whose computer is on or anything. Cool. Okay, great. Ryan, good to have you tonight. Man, it's the return is well worth it. I'm excited to have you here tonight.
Excited to be here. Good interview. Like I said, excited that we can pull people away from the network for a few moments to hang out for the 100th episode. So that's a good feeling. And a good interview. as you guys know, I was a big fan of Hawkins and Rex together, so that was awesome
yes.
to hear. Glad he's doing good. Glad he's doing well.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir, and it's great to have you. So without further ado, let's get into the Elimination Chamber. Extreme Rules will be in April, but the Elimination Chamber, we start off with the pre-show of Goldust and Cody Rhodes defeating Rybacksel. Galeno, what's your thoughts on that match?
Julio, that's how you say
Julio,
my name.
Julio, yeah.
That's all right. First off, I'm still surprised that they took off the titles away from Goldust and Cody Rhodes. I think they were doing pretty good. Yeah, up to where they were, the run was okay. They've done their they did their contribution. It was time to pass on the titles to someone else, but. Like the Usos, I think they're more than ready, and now they're going to get their opportunity. But when it comes to Goldust and Cody Rhodes, they put in the time, they do the work. Their matches have always been of good quality, and from them to go on from tag team champions and being the centerpiece of the division to being on a pre-show versus a team that I don't even know why they even have airtime still. You know, the match is good, but I expected more from the Brotherhood unit than what they're getting right now, honestly.
Hmm.
That's my opinion on
Ryan,
it. Yeah.
Ryan, do you have the same thoughts or different?
I just think it was a feel-good opener. And like I said before, Rhodes Brothers always impressive, but Ryback, I'm still hanging tough, man. He's still getting my pity vote. I know people think I'm crazy, but he's still – I'm like a fan out of pity now. I don't know how to explain it, but, yeah, it was okay. Just a little spot filler, feel good match for the opener, or
yeah.
pre-show, rather.
Yeah. Derek, Biggie against Jack Swagger.
Oh, Biggie and Jack Swagger. Yeah, that was a good match. I enjoyed that match. It was very good. Swagger, I mean, he really impressed me last night. Biggie Langston as well. With the Intercontinental Championship going on like that, Biggie Langston is a good Intercontinental Champion. I can't say the same about Swagger so much as far as, I mean, I like Swagger. I think he could do something with the title, but the match ended up the way it should have been. Biggie Langston still has a lot to prove, so we'll keep that going. And Jack Swagger still has a long way to go, but he's prominent. He's there. He's a great mid-carder. I like him. Real Americans is still going strong, a lot longer than I thought it would. So I'll keep the Swagger thing going. But Biggie Langston definitely came out last night, and he put the show on.
Mm.
Sunday, yeah, yeah, I agree. That was good match, and Biggie's a good Intercontinental Champion, definitely.
Yeah. Well, Big E, he's no longer Big E Langston for some reason.
Yeah, what
happened
to that?
Yeah. No more Antonio Cesaro, no more Big E Langston. Interesting question on the chat room. When are they going to introduce the I Need Five gimmick? I think it'll go over, but that was, I guess they wanted to keep that in NXT, but since the NXT is starting to get more exposure because of the network, I think it would be a good idea if they went back to the five gimmick. It was way over NXT, and I think it'd be over in the WWE main stage as well, seeing still how his theme music says, three ain't enough, man, I need five, so it just makes sense for them to bring it back. Ryan, Titus O'Neil against Darren Young. Bathroom break match?
Not as bad as Batista ADR bathroom break, not paying attention, but nonetheless, yeah, bathroom break match. But I think it would have been better for Titus had it not just ended so abruptly. Like, they should have did a little something there, because I really like Titus on that ICUS level. I'm kind of not, you know, giving him a short ceiling, but no higher than that, just IC U.S. title level.
Julio, Biggie Langston versus Titus O'Neil, WrestleMania Intercontinental Championship, buy or sell?
I'll sell that.
Really?
I'm starting to like Titus O'Neil, but I think Big E needs to fight the U.S. champion and unify those titles as soon as possible. I know it's probably not going to happen at WrestleMania, but why do we have to rush things? The guy, Titus O'Neil, just went solo. Let's take it slow here. They've rushed into things so often. Let's get the fans under, let's get the fans liking Titus O'Neil for starters. You know, Big E can do so much, and he's already on a good course. Let's not screw things up in a throwaway match at WrestleMania 30. This isn't 28. It's 30. It's a big number. Every match has to mean something, hopefully. You know, that's how I see it.
I totally agree with that. That's the reason why I don't know why they're doing John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. That's such a trial and error, and I don't like that idea.
John Cena should have been fighting Undertaker. I've been saying that for so long. It's a big number. It's 30. It's not 31. It's not 29. I don't know. There's something about it that an Undertaker doesn't have that many years left. John Cena is. Could have been perfect in there right now. Brock Lesnar could have fought anyone else, you know.
I think Brock Sheamus would have been a good match, honestly. Anybody
sure.
else think
or
of
even
that?
Batista.
Brock Sheamus, good match for 30?
I don't like that at WrestleMania. I do like that feud, but not for Mania. I'm not sure why either. It's not a WrestleMania feud for me.
Derek,
Brock
Sheamus, at 30.
Not for Mania.
Think?
Yeah.
Not for Mania.
You say
Derek,
Rock
what
Sheamus?
Do you think?
I like it,
Brock.
Though. I like it.
Yeah.
Brock? No, because the way the WWE's going, they're going to – Brock would totally destroy Sheamus. I mean, he's going to squash him. That's just the way that they're going. Yeah, Sheamus will put up a good fight, but I honestly don't think that it's going to be a selling point that people can buy into. Not for this guy, anyway.
I'm just trying to figure out where they could put Brock Lesnar if they did Taker Cena. Let's go down the list. Ryan, who does Brock go against? Rock's not an option because he's not going to be at 30. If there's one person on the roster right now, and we'll go down the list, who would you have Brock Lesnar go against? Ryan.
I hate to say it because we just talked about rushing things, but maybe I have him put Roman Reigns over at WrestleMania 30 and see where that leads. That's just off the top of my head. That was the first thing I could think of.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. Derek.
Who should Brock Lesnar face? Gee whiz.
Yeah. One name.
You know,
who would you pick?
I wasn't prepared to answer this. Probably, why not put him up against Reigns? I can see that, but I don't see him. I don't see Reigns winning. There's no way. Come back to me. That's a hard question.
All right, Julio, what
this
you
is
got?
Pancake and power slams. Wow.
What you got?
I would have said Batista would have been perfect, fitting that they're both. They're both vying to become WWE World Heavyweight Champions. It could have been like that main event, Randy Orton versus Batista. Don't even get me started on that. Daniel Bryan has to come out of that night. Yeah, he has to come out that night somehow as the champion, and with those two monsters fighting for that one spot, it would have been enough, and it's big enough because they're both returning. Both under contract for a little while, and there's so many pay-per-views afterwards that Daniel Bryan could be the champion, that the little guy like Bret Hart, for example, fighting all the top guys, and these two behemoths coming after him, one after the other. That could have carried on to SummerSlam for maybe a rematch with John Cena, who knows. But Brock Lesnar could have easily fought Batista, and it would have been just as good, and they're both big and whatever. It would have been perfect for that one night.
Yeah, I think Reigns is a good option. But I think
it's just
Brock
too soon.
Batista. I can see that. But I think Batista and Lesnar actually would have saved Batista as far as getting the heel heat that he has. Mm-hmm. I think the heel heat generated mostly because he won the Royal Rumble and Daniel Bryan wasn't even in it. I think, and interestingly enough, Jerry Lawler even said that on Raw, which is very away from kayfabe, which I was very surprised that Jerry Lawler said that on Raw. So, New Age Outlaws against the Usos, Derek.
Oh, that was awesome. New Age Outlaws. That was great. You know, I love to see them. I know you still, yeah, whatever. Don't give me that. Attitude Era, they're always going to reign supreme over anything that's gone on the last 10 years. I loved it. It was great. Let them ride off into the sunset. They're not going to be around for that much longer, I'm sure. If they are, then good. They'll get stale. But let's keep that going. That's all the WWE has anymore. I mean, you can talk about your Cenas and Batistas. Batista, he was an absolute joke last night on Raw. But we'll talk about that later. But let's continue.
Wyatt Family versus The Shield. Ryan, was that the best match of the night? Wyatt Family versus Shield?
I think he went to bed.
Why, yes, it was. Very good.
Ryan, are you there? Yeah, still looks, says he's still there. Julio,
hello,
best match of the night
me?
Or no? Okay, there we go.
It was the best
Ryan.
Match of the night. Ah, there.
Ryan, there you go. Best match of the night?
Oh, by far the six-man tag. I mean, that's easy. You just threw me a underhand softball, so. Yeah, six-man tag.
Yeah. Was that the best match of the night, Julio?
I think so. I agree. By far, the build-up for that was every week when they did their like meeting in the ring and the lights come off, they come back on, and just the face-off, the build-up was done well, and the match itself was really good, and it's unfortunate that the program is already over. I would have seen that all go all the way to WrestleMania, I think. If that's where it should have happened, I guess.
I don't know. Just the whole heel versus heel thing to me is for WrestleMania. I'd rather see Roman Reigns have his moment and be U.S. champion. AJ Lee against Cameron. AJ Lee finally defends the title. I think the most treacherous part of that match was the almost three count. When Tamina kicked AJ, and we almost believed that Cameron was going to be Divas champ.
I can put it in perspective for you about the
boy. Bye.
I'm more excited about the what is it? The NXT arrival, the Emma versus Paige NXT Women's title than I am any Divas title match, and I don't know how long. So that puts it in perspective.
I mean, Cameron winning the Divas Championship, oh, boy. AJ Lee needs to drop it, but when that referee almost counted to three, I was just like, no, like a slow, no. That's where my mind was. So. Randy Orton winning the Elimination Chamber. Julio, good decision?
Well, given the opponents and, expecting the rumors to be true with Triple H versus Daniel Bryan, I guess I agree. I can go with Randy Orton being the champion at Mania, but something has to give. Someone else has to get in there. He's not going to keep it for sure. That's guaranteed after that night, after Mania. And someone else has to be inserted in that match because the way things are going, Randy Orton is a bad champion. I don't like him. I liked the character for a long time, but not now. He's whining and it's just ugh.
Ryan,
but
and
I
think
that's
your boy
for that night.
Yeah,
Ryan, that's your boy.
I know. I think I've heard some Randy Orton bashing on the show the past few weeks, and I understand. I get it. But
Don't get me wrong. I've always liked Randy Orton. I've always liked him until the last few months. I think
he's a poorly booked champion as of right now.
Exactly. That's in the words.
Didn't he could be champion? No.
I don't know if he's poorly booked. I just don't like his character. I just think his gimmick. He's a paper champion. I mean, there's just someone they throw the championship on, say, carry us for a little bit, because we've got nothing else going on right now. He won. I can see why they would choose that. I can see it, but I don't believe it. If I was on WWE staff, I'd say, what are you doing? This guy's in a nutshell. So, yeah, it is what it is. It's WWE programming. I actually thought that the Elimination Chamber was probably one of the better pay-per-views of the last five or six. But, thought it was.
Yeah.
It was okay.
For
but
sure.
The outcome, no, not too much. But
It was a
solid. I miss the old days.
Yeah.
I miss the old days when there was less pay-per-views.
Yes.
And more build-up.
Yeah, but, you know, it's all about, as Vince McMahon would say, it's all about the money. So
less hours of programming, period.
Yes, plus we have the WWE Network now, too. So we're going to go through Raw. I'm just going to go through Raw, and then each of us will take our biggest takeaways from Raw. So I'll start with a Hulk Hogan in-ring promo. Alberto Del Rio defeating Batista, getting distracted by Randy Orton. He cuts a promo on the stage, which also kind of broke kayfabe too, and saying that the fans were booing Batista. Big E defeats Cesaro by DQ as a result of a Jack Swagger interference. John Cena comes out for an in-ring promo and calls out Bray Wyatt. Wyatt family appears, and then Bray Wyatt cuts a promo, which was very good. Wyatt family attacks Cena. Sheamus defeats Christian. Daniel Bryan defeats Corporate Kane, so that may be the end of that, thankfully. And then Daniel Bryan speaks after the match, and then calls out Triple H for WrestleMania 30. We got Emma defeating Summer Rae with her debut. Usos defeating New Age Outlaws very quickly. Bray Wyatt defeating Roman Reigns by disqualification as a result of Dean Ambrose attacking Bray Wyatt. Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman in-ring promo, and then The Undertaker appears. So Ryan, what's your takeaways from Raw?
I got to say Orton calling out Batista getting booed and all that, because that's WWE actually acknowledging their mistake. So that's honestly shocking to me that they would even acknowledge it.
Yeah
that's totally a good way to see it.
Yeah. Triple H's Studio. Ego, Vince's ego, so yeah.
Yeah, I totally
very shocked
with that. Very much so. What's your biggest takeaways, Julio?
Undertaker coming back. I was waiting for that for so long, and just the way he looked, it was cool. It made my night. It made me wait that whole 3 hours just for that. You know, erased all the bad memories of the last few months. Definitely. And just a fake or whatever, the seeming driving the pen through the hand, that was cool.
Yeah, totally.
Definitely.
Derek, biggest takeaways from Raw?
Oh, of course. Hulk Hogan returns. What was so great about it is they didn't start off with the theme song of Raw. Just Real American just started. Everybody went nuts. That's what you expect from Hulk Hogan and Monday Night Raw. That's what you expect every week. That would be great. And then The Undertaker finishing Raw. We haven't seen The Undertaker in a year. Absolutely wonderful. I mean, that was a great Raw. Everything, Kane versus Daniel Bryan, I thought was just such an absolute phenomenal match. That was great. Vintage Kane. Yeah, he wasn't wearing the mask and all the flames and everything. But, I mean, he handled Bryan and Bryan handled him. Awesome, awesome wrestling. Chris Sheamus was great. Fandango came out. He didn't wrestle, but Summer Rae and Emma. New Age Outlaws, Usos. The titles weren't on the line. That's good. But it was all around. It was a great Raw following up. But then having Hulk Hogan and Undertaker on there just add icing to the cake.
Yeah. I went back 30 years when Real American came out.
Exactly.
When Real American came on. It was just automatic child inner Mark out moment when Hogan, and I knew that was going to happen. I knew it was going to happen. There's been many times where you're like, oh, Hulk Hogan, whatever. But as soon as Real, and here's the thing, I'm glad, I like the Voodoo Child theme song with Hogan, but I'm very, very happy that they chose Real American over Voodoo Child. I think it was very fitting. This is celebrating the 30th year of Hulkamania, and it's very fitting that you would do that. You can even tell that Hulk Hogan still had some jitters doing this for 30 years. You can tell he kind of stumbled on a couple of the words, I just saw just like still he was awe-stricken that he, you know, that Green Bay crowd of probably, you know, 10,000 people as opposed to the 2,000 people in TNA crowds.
Impact
Zone.
Yeah, the Impact Zone. So, you know, he's used to seeing smaller crowds for the past few years. So I love that. And you're right. You know, all of you are right as far as the WWE admitting their kind of trying to right their wrong with the Batista thing, and I think that Randy Orton coming out and saying that is interesting, especially seeing how Randy Orton's just an annoying heel now. He kind of played the babyface role a little bit, and I wonder if they are going to roll with that as far as Randy Orton kind of slowly turning into a babyface. They've got some time to build that. I wonder if that'll happen. Now, if he turns all this losing and this poorly booking, I will say this. It would set up Randy Orton for a good babyface push again, just because he's just been so poorly booked as a heel. It's been absolutely horrible. So, yeah, I definitely think that it was a great Raw. And, Julio, you were absolutely right as far as the little nuances that we saw with Undertaker and Bray, the stare down, the looking up at the sign, the pin stabbing, the choke slam. He didn't sign the contract either, which was interesting. So we'll see how if that plays into storyline at all. So yeah, it was wow. Fantastic Raw. I totally agree with that. We haven't had much time for Stump the Host, but chat room, feel free to throw out some questions, some trivia questions, or Twitter @CraveWrestling. We got about 10 minutes, a little over 10 minutes, and we're going to go into the flavor of the week, which is we're going to talk about WrestleMania 9 and WrestleMania 10. But tweet @CraveWrestling or chat room. Do whatever question you have. You have four people who've been watching wrestling just about all their lives and is very skilled with knowing professional wrestling. So throw the questions out there, and we'll answer them. As we talk about WrestleMania 9, we're flavor of the week. We're going through the WrestleMania series. We've talked about 8 of them in the past few weeks. And now we're going to talk about 9, which starts off with Tatanka, with Sensational Sierra defeating Shawn Michaels by countout for the Intercontinental Championship. The Steiner Brothers defeating the Head Shrinkers. Doink the Clown defeating Crush. Razor Ramon defeating Bob Backlund. Money Inc. defeating the Mega Maniacs to retain the Tag Team Championships. Lex Luger defeating Mr. Perfect. The Undertaker defeating Giant Gonzalez. Yokozuna defeating Bret Hart. And then Hulk Hogan with the messed up eye coming out and taking Yokozuna's shine and within like 20 seconds gaining the championship. A lot of people say this was the worst WrestleMania in history, Caesar's Palace. Ryan, I remember that one very well. Yeah, it was pretty awful. Ryan, do you what do you think about WrestleMania 9?
Not much to think about here. I actually kind of compare it to modern day, like the finish with Hogan running out and, like you said, stealing Yoke's shine. It's a little reminiscent of something that could happen now with, like, John Cena. So that's funny to me. I don't know. There's nothing really I can take away from here. I'm looking at the card as we speak, and it may very well hold that title. I honestly cannot. There's not much I can take away from here. I don't know.
Yeah, Julio, you say you remember that title. Yeah, Julio, you say you remember that one well, huh?
I was a very, very big Bret Hart fan, and I was completely shocked when he dropped the title. Okay, it could have been fine for Yokozuna, but the whole Hulk Hogan thing, I was so mad. At the end of the night, I was practically jumping on my bed, and I was already, what, like 15? So Bret Hart was the guy that I really went for back then, like after The Ultimate Warrior, and Bret Hart was good. He's still my favorite, and it just was a bad way to end the night. It was just, if I would have paid all that money, I think I would have been very disappointed if I was on site. Of course, yeah, back then, it was also Hulk Hogan's first Mania in a few years, so, okay, yeah, it's a good marketing thing, I don't know, but it was just wrong. It was just wrong to end it that way.
Derek, you always say bad things.
An impressive guy.
Yeah. Derek, you always say bad things about WrestleMania 9. You have any other bad things to say about it?
Nothing that hasn't already been said. Probably one of the best things about WrestleMania 9 is when Bobby the Brain Heenan was coming out through the ring and he was backwards on the elephant. That was pretty
funny.
Yeah. I mean, that was great. Yeah, the whole thing was just kind of weird when Hulk Hogan came out, his eye was all busted up from some gym accident or something. I don't remember.
I think it was a boat accident.
It was awkward. Yeah, the whole thing was just awkward. They were outside Caesar's Palace. I mean, the crowd wasn't really that big. It just, I can see why they wanted to do something like that, but just, yeah, it wasn't anything to write about.
Yeah.
I think the shiner he got was from Macho Man.
It was.
Yeah, they didn't
like
each other back then too much. So.
Yeah, I think.
Well, there's a few things about that. From what a lot of reports say over the years, I've heard
he was
Savage,
in an accident or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, I've heard that he was in a boat accident with him and Beefcake. That's another report. I mean, there's been many reports over the years. As far as WrestleMania 9 is concerned, on my end, I didn't think it was as bad as people think. I'm not happy that Perfect kind of got fed to Luger, especially when he retired Flair earlier that year. He really had an amazing ability to be. He could have been one of the top baby faces of 1993, in my opinion, especially with that great feud with him and Flair, the Loser Leaves Raw match in, I believe it was January that year. Or February.
Yeah.
That, no, I think it was right after the Rumble. So, yeah, the Loser Leaves Raw match. That was great. He could have been the top babyface to me, but they really kind of it just really didn't work out for Mr. Perfect, and he kind of saw the decline of Mr. Perfect's WWE career starting in 1993. It just didn't work out. The Mega Maniacs, Hulk Hogan and Beefcake. That didn't go over too well for me. I remember when Dork the Clown defeated Crush, and I always wondered why Dork the Clown had such a I don't understand why he had a big push, period, but especially when he was a heel, they really saw a lot in him for some reason, and it's interesting what Tyler Rex was saying, that beforehand, like back in the day, the WWE was so gimmick heavy, and Doink the Clown was the epitome of a gimmick-heavy person, a gimmick-heavy competitor. He was good in the ring. Matt Bourne was a good wrestler, but just Doink the Clown. As a kid, I liked him as a face just because he was a funny clown, but as a heel, I was just I didn't buy it at all. And I have to agree with everyone as far as the Hogan steal. I was in favor of Hogan back then, but in hindsight, I really don't see the purpose of Hogan taking that shine away from Yokozuna, especially since he won the Royal Rumble to get to that spot that year, mm-hmm. but only had the title for, you know, 20 seconds. And then The Undertaker, his only disqualification WrestleMania win, and against probably his worst competitor, I would say Giant Gonzalez. I would say number two would be the handicap match with Big Show and A-Train. I think that was a horrible idea. But the whole that was rough. But the whole Giant Gonzalez thing, I mean, even back from when Giant Gonzalez was El Gigante in the WCW, he was just not – there was no promise in that guy at all. So, but at least we go to WrestleMania 10. At least that was better as far as competitive.
Yes, it was. Much better.
Yeah, it was an MSG, Madison Square Garden, 20 years ago, 1994. The card was Owen Hart versus Bret Hart. Well, the backstory of 1994, as we all know, but for all the listeners, maybe some who don't know, the backstory of that. Real quick, we got some questions for Stomp the Host in the chat room. So let's... let's pose this one to Julio, the guest of the show. Can you name all the members of NWO through all companies? Oh, that's a loaded question.
Whoa, yeah. Okay, we don't have time for that one.
No, yeah. We don't have time for that. We don't have time for that one. That's about 83 people, so
yeah.
through WCW and Japan.
Yeah. Might as well do all LWO, BWO, let's do them all.
Yeah, that's an entire show itself, so that's come on, chat room. That was thank you for participating in Stump the Host, but that was a loaded question. I got another one in the chat room. How much did Yokozuna weigh? Anyone have any answer to that one? How much did Yokozuna weigh?
Wasn't it 505 pounds, something like that?
Yeah, I think it was 505. It was like they built him as.
Yeah.
505. Yeah.
Put Andre.
Yeah. That was – thank you for participating in the Stomp the Host chat room. now this – just because that question was posed, I think next week I may even just think about that and try to go through the list as many people as I can name, but we definitely don't have the time for it now. But let's go into WrestleMania 10. We got real quick, the backstory was the Royal Rumble, we had Bret Hart and Lex Luger winning, and so they both had to be in matches at WrestleMania, and well, Bret Hart was in a match, and then Lex Luger was awarded the match against Yokozuna initially, and then Bret Hart later went against Yokozuna. Kind of a redemption from the previous year before. Well, I think this is the only WrestleMania back-to-back main event for the world title. We saw Cena and Rock, but one of them was non-title. So Owen Hart, Bret Hart, Owen Hart defeats Bret Hart, I would never forget that when Bret Hart had Owen in the electric chair drop and he rolled over and hooked the legs. Bam Bam Bigelow and Luna defeated Doink and Dink. Randy Savage defeating Crush. That was a really good match. The Falls Count Anywhere. Alundra Blaze defeated Leilani Kai. Man on a Mission, special shout out to Mabel, defeated the Quebecers by count out but they didn't win the championship. It was for the title, though. Mm-hmm. Yokozuna defeating Lex Luger by disqualification. Earthquake defeating Adam Bomb, filler match. Razor Ramon defeating Shawn Michaels to retain the Intercontinental Championship, one of the best WrestleMania matches of all time with the ladder match. And then Bret Hart defeating Yokozuna to win the WWE Championship. Ryan, you have any? What's your biggest takeaways from 94 WrestleMania 10?
Definitely, by far, the ladder match Intercontinental title is just, that's back when the IC title was just as, I mean, like, what do you say, like 5% under the WWE title, so.
Oh, yeah.
And that match
was a big deal.
And it could have went either way, so that's definitely that, by far. And no Taker, right? No Taker this one?
Yep, that was one
nope.
of the only ones
yeah,
where there
yeah.
were no Taker. Yep, good call on that one. Mm-hmm. Julio, biggest takeaways from 10?
Actually, there was two for me, the Bret Hart versus Owen Hart, the opener, very good, and the ladder match, definitely. We still talk about it today. They keep bringing it up. We can't forget it. It's going to be number 30 this year. Is there going to be something reminiscent of that match? Example, Money in the Bank, who knows? Shawn Michaels, Scott Hall. Very good people, like, in the ring. I hope that Scott Hall gets his Hall of Fame nomination. You know, those were great matches. Owen Hart, Bret Hart, legendary. What more is there to say?
Absolutely. Well said. Derek, biggest takeaways from WrestleMania 10?
Biggest takeaways have already been said. The only thing about WrestleMania 10 that really stood out was, again, Owen Hart versus Bret Hart. Awesome, awesome match. And then the ladder match. It was the first of its kind. I don't want to say it was the best ladder match of all time, but it was definitely something that no one has really seen until then. Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels for the IC Championship. It was just absolutely one of a kind at the time. And again, I don't want to say it was the best ladder match, but it was a ladder match that no one seen before. It was absolutely mind-blowing, almost kind of like the first Hell in a Cell match. Taker. Well, that wasn't first, but that was the one that really set the bar. So, phenomenal. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
That was my takeaway from WrestleMania 10.
Mm-hmm.
And real quick, wasn't that Savage's last Mania?
Yeah, good call.
Yes, it was.
Too, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Wow.
It was.
Yeah.
Good call.
My biggest takeaways from this was, of course, Owen and Bret, and, well, I mean, Both with all three of y'all said, Owen and Bret and Razor and Michaels. One of my biggest takeaways from this actually was the Falls Count Anywhere match, where it ended at the in the back, if I'm not mistaken, and
yeah,
Randy Savage tied Crush up and hung him upside down. So yeah, that was biggest. I was really big on that match. It was a really good match, and Randy Savage's last match. But the longest match of the night was Bret and Owen. That was such a fantastic match. So. All right, we are running out of time. Real quick, Yokozuna was billed as 589 pounds. So we'll continue Stump the Host next week. We didn't have enough time, but we're running out of time. Thank you guys so much. I'm so excited. Derek, just throughout the 100 episodes, you've been so amazing. Ryan,
100 episodes.
You have been, you,
the place
yeah,
to be,
Ryan, you,
Pancakes
you've
and Power
been
Slam.
Amazing. Yes, sir. Ryan, you've been amazing. You, pioneer. with me, and I'm looking forward to more segments with Ryan. He's back in action. And Julio, thank you so much. Bleacher Report featured columnist along with me. Check me out at BleacherReportWrestling.com. And I thank you guys so much for continuing to support. And this has been a fantastic show. Kudos to Tyler Rex, BodySpartan.com. Go there. I will be there as well. We are running out of time. Until next week, enjoy your Rika Wrestling. God bless. 100 episodes. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.